Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will look at two diseases that are affecting millions of people, most of them children under five in Africa, malaria and cholera. We start in Benin, where officials say the country has received its first doses of a vaccine for malaria, the leading cause of infant mortality in the nation. They say they will begin administering the malaria vaccine soon. According to health officials, nearly 216,000 doses of the RTSS vaccine were delivered to immunize around 200,000 children under the age of two. Government data reveals that in Benin, 40% of outpatient consultations and 25% of hospital admissions are linked to malaria. The World Health Organization has certified Cape Verde as malaria-free. The WHO says Cape Verde has gone three consecutive years without local malaria transmission and has demonstrated the ability to prevent the reestablishment of transmission to be certified malaria-free. For more insight, I spoke with Dr. Dorothy Achu, team lead for tropical and vector-borne diseases in the WHO Region Office for Africa.
Cape Verde has been officially declared free of malaria. What is the significance of this latest development and what did it take?
Well, it's quite an interesting time for the African region to have this achievement after almost 50 years of the fight against malaria, the very first sub-Saharan African country to have eliminated malaria. What did it take? It took a lot of hard work on the part of the leadership of Cabo Verde. This is over 50 years of fighting against malaria. It's a small country with low malaria transmission, so they were already identified as eligible for eliminating malaria by 2025. So the government of Cabo Verde has been working hard on this, and they have had several iterations of reducing incidence and even eliminating the disease before this year for the certification.
The country had a 5-year strategies. What do you think that other African countries can learn from the Cabo Verde experience?
Yes, the Cabo Verde just completed a strategy for elimination of malaria. So it takes, the determination to get to zero cases. And once a country adopts that kind of policy, it means they are ready to mobilize the resources that it takes in terms of scaling up the right set of interventions, in terms of strengthening the follow-up of cases, what we call surveillance. Surveillance is really tracking down all cases, making sure they are identified early and treated with very effective medication. But not only that, also looking at the vectors that transmit the parasite from one person to another, the mosquitoes. So there's been a lot of work in understanding the distribution of the mosquitoes, their behavior, and the choice of interventions. Cabo Verde has been involved in a lot of spraying, mass campaigns of spraying, and reducing the mosquito density, and also now getting to fight resistance and trying to get the right interventions to eliminate the malaria vectors. So they have reduced the vectors, the density of vectors, but most importantly, they have eliminated the parasite from the vectors. So you can have mosquitoes, but you no longer have the parasite because they are no longer circulating in the country.
So let's talk about the synergy between various entities. What role does the government play in a case like this and the healthcare system and communities to get to that result?
A very important question. The government, right from when they adopted the most recent plan to eliminate the disease. They put in place several multi-sectoral committees. There was an anti-vector commission made of a multidisciplinary team to make sure that right from the very decentralized unit, all the councils are involved in fighting malaria, you know, environmental control and making sure the mosquitoes are controlled in their council areas. This multi-sectoral committee also, one of them was a technical team, an advisory body for malaria elimination, responsible for setting the policies, monitoring the interventions, and evaluating and trying to implement the recommendations from technical experts. There've been support also, of course, from WHO, because 3 years ago, when they started recording zero cases, we knew they were on the path to elimination. And at the right time, the country, Cabo Verde, had to now request for WHO to come verify that they were ripe for certification. And WHO and the partners and the committee in charge of malaria elimination were represented to verify that not only did they have zero cases in the country, but that they had the right systems in place to detect early any case that may arise so that to prevent resurgence or reestablishment of transmission in the country. So we want to make sure that if they are certified, then we do not have an upsurge of cases down the road, like 2-3 years down the road, that will bring back malaria into the country. So they are on the right path and they have everything in place to do that.
And this leads me to my next question, which is how does the WHO collaborate with Cabo Verde to ensure that they can sustain this achievement of being malaria free?
Yes, the first thing is that once you're certified as a country, it doesn't mean that you stop your activities. So we have worked with Cabo Verde to develop another plan, a strategy, which is to prevent the re-establishment of malaria. And in that plan, it takes really strengthening the health system, the laboratory systems to properly diagnose, train the doctors, nurses, train surveillance officers, train vector control teams to be able to monitor cases that could be suspected for malaria, but on the vector space also identify that there are no infected mosquitoes in the country. So that plan also has a set of activities that ensures that there is no reestablishment, but more so, we expect the country to keep reporting every year that they have zero cases. And each year we'll expect the country to report the number of cases they have registered. Of course, we expect them to have imported cases from different countries. And Cabo Verde has been exposed to those importation of cases coming from neighboring countries. But once the cases come, they are labeled as imported cases and investigated to make sure they're imported. And in case there's a local case, an indigenous case which arises from the country, that is where we have to put together all the strategies to make sure that those cases are treated very early so that they do not establish new communications through the vectors. So reporting and monitoring is very key.
So now that we see that Cabo Verde is malaria-free officially, Africa has more than 90% of cases of malaria. Most of the victims are children under five. Is the Cabo Verde experience hope in terms of the reach of a malaria-free Africa? Is it something that is possible? Is it very difficult to really anticipate that?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. We have been Looking at the statistics in the region, and they are quite disturbing. They are disturbing because in terms of cases, the cases have been increasing rather than decreasing. Nonetheless, we have a few countries which are like Cabo Verde, targeted for elimination. We have about six of the countries in Africa. They're among the 25 countries globally that have been identified as being able to eliminate malaria by 2025. That is the end of next year. So we have countries like with low transmission. We can cite Botswana, Eswatini, South Africa, you know, those countries. And there's even an island country such as Sao Tome, Principe, Comoros. Those are countries with low cases, with low number of deaths, and they are on a very good path to also eliminate malaria, and they can learn from Cabo Verde what they did. But in the for the rest of the country, the rest of the continent, it's going to be a difficult task, but it needs that we just keep going on the path of mobilizing enough resources to make sure that interventions are available, services are being delivered to the people, to the populations, so that the burden is reduced. So if we can succeed to reduce the burden, to reduce the number of cases, and if we can get to zero deaths, because that is another problem, is that we still have so many preventable deaths. If malaria was just cases and we weren't having deaths, it would have been a great idea. It would have been a burden on the system, but the social burden would have been less. So several countries are making great progress in eliminating deaths. And if you can eliminate malaria deaths, it means you're already on a good path to eliminate malaria. And you can start in certain areas of the country. You must not do it nationwide. In the same country, we have low transmission areas, we have high burden areas. There are several countries that are already implementing subnational elimination strategies, trying to reduce malaria in certain areas of the country. And that is the kind of hope that we have, that we can learn from Cabo Verde, everyone, to make sure we are shrinking the map and kicking malaria gradually out of our continent.
Dr. Dorothy Achu, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you very much for having me and for contributing to our work.
That was Dr. Dorothy Achu, team lead for tropical and vector-borne diseases in the WHO Regional Office for Africa. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hey folks, I'm Luckbill Yabaro, and I have some electrifying news for you. AFCON 2023 is here, and I'll be at Ivory Coast covering all things AFCON for VOA Africa. We'll have exciting coverage on radio, TV, and all of our digital platforms. Make sure you check out voaafrica.com for AFCON updates. Stay locked right here on VOA Africa.
Welcome back to Health Chat. Zambia is dealing with one of its worst cholera outbreaks in recent years, as over 350 people have died and nearly 9,000 active cases have been registered. Authorities say they have received a first batch of more than a million oral doses of cholera vaccines from the WHO to fight a dangerous outbreak. For more on cholera and what is happening in Zambia, I spoke with Dr. Patrick Otim from Brazzaville. He's medical epidemiologist and oversees health emergencies with the WHO Africa region.
Dr. Patrick Otim, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
On the show today, we want to talk about cholera. Cholera is a disease that has been around for many, many years. And yet we still see how much devastation it's causing around the world and particularly in Africa. Before we start, please help us understand what cholera is.
Thank you very much, Rachel. So as you rightly mentioned, cholera is a disease that has been around for a very long time. It's basically an acute diarrheal infection which is caused by a bacterium that we call Vibrio cholerae. The bacteria is ingested, is taken in through food, through drinks that are contaminated, or fingers that are contaminated, and results in an acute infection that causes very, very severe diarrhea. Now, cholera disease has three stages. The stage one of the disease is usually associated with an abrupt onset of very profuse, painless, and watery diarrhea. And usually, because the patient passes a lot of at the early phases, the stool, and then followed by just some white liquid, which we usually describe that it looks like the rice water. This stage is called the stage of evacuation, stage one. It is a very critical stage in the cholera management because we need to detect a patient at this stage when they are still actively passing the stool. The second stage is the stage of collapse. In this stage, the person has lost a lot of minerals and has lost a lot of fluids, and they have become dehydrated. And usually because of the severe dehydration, the patient collapses. So in context where people don't reach the health facility early in the first stage, they are brought in the stage of collapse, where they have severe dehydration and their systems are shutting down, the kidney is shutting down, and eventually the liver will shut down. So this is a very bad stage that we do not want to get the patient in. And the last stage is the stage of recovery. So if a patient is got early in the first stage, and you replace the fluids and the ions that they are losing, you can be able then to bypass stage two and they move to stage three, which is stage of recovery. Interestingly, cholera is very easy to manage, and most of the patients can recover. WHO usually recommends that for all cholera outbreaks, we should keep the case fatality ratio, which is the number of people, the proportion of cases that die, below 1%. That is if people are able to get the fluid replacement early. If they don't, we can lose up to 50%. So for the outbreaks that we are seeing currently, we are losing up to 4% of the patients, which is still very, very high compared to the less than 1% threshold that WHO recommends.
So we will come back to the outbreak that we are seeing now. Before we do that, you mentioned the fact that diarrhea is very much part of an onset of cholera, symptoms of cholera. What is the difference between diarrhea from cholera and another diarrheal disease that children often develop, given that children are often at risk of cholera? They are more at risk.
Absolutely, yes. Children are at higher risk of infection of cholera and other diarrheal diseases, usually because of their low immunity, the poor hygiene, because they pick things here and there on the ground, they don't wash their hands regularly, they are not sensitive to their hygiene like adults. And when you look at the diarrhea, which is caused by other organisms, commonly in children, one of them is rotavirus that causes diarrhea, and the diarrhea due to cholera, there are certain characteristics that we have to look at. The first one is that the diarrhea in cholera is very, very profuse and mostly is just water, white water with the flecks of mucus. There's a mucus and it typically has a rice water-like stool, and it is a painless diarrhea. So, and most times the person who has this diarrhea cannot be able to walk, cannot run, and say, you know, when you feel some abdominal upset, you say you are running to the toilet. You cannot control the diarrhea for cholera. It is just flowing. So the person will stand or sit and it is just flowing. You are not even able to go to the toilet. And that is characteristic of the diarrhea of cholera. And of course, there is usually no fever, and it has what we call like a fishy odor. While when you look at the diarrhea due to other causes, sometimes there will be fever. There's usually cramping in the abdomen, and it's usually a mixture of solid and loose stool. But for cholera, it's just pure liquid, which is whitish that the person is discharging. And so that's how we are able to differentiate. When you look at that white stool, you can just immediately know that this is cholera and it's not the other diarrheal diseases.
What do you consider the major issues to fighting cholera currently in Africa?
Thank you very much. This is a very, very important issue, because at this day and age, we should not be having the number of cholera outbreaks that we are having. So the cholera outbreaks that we are having are occurring in four contexts. The first one is the humanitarian crisis. So we have humanitarian crisis due to conflict, where we have had displacement and people do not have access to clean and safe water. And therefore, it is very difficult to control outbreak in those settings, because the people have been displaced and their access to safe water and hygiene facilities is greatly, greatly curtailed. The second one then is due to climate-related factors. So we have had increased issues of drought in the Greater Horn of Africa that has really reduced access to safe and clean water. But also we have had flooding, which happened in a number of areas. And even now we are seeing that areas like Congo, DRC, there's flooding happening in most of them. So and Zambia, some weeks back, also most of the areas were flooded. So this flooding really is one of the factors that's contributing to the cholera and making it very hard to contain. The third aspect is the poverty and inequality and lack of development. So most of the areas where you find these outbreaks happening, these are people with the low socioeconomic status. They do not have access to piped water or clean water and access to latrines. Then the last one is the issue of the urbanization. So we've had in most of the countries in Africa, very rapid urbanization. And this rapid urbanization has not been accompanied by increase in access to clean water and sanitation facilities. And most of these urban or peri-urban areas are not adequately planned, so they are not planned settlements. So people just come and settle, and therefore you have limited access to safe and clean water. And so all these factors put together are some of the things that are making it very, very difficult for us to control the outbreak.
So can cholera epidemics be predicted to some extent when you talk about conflict, climate, poverty? If we look at these as indicators, is it possible to predict a cholera outbreak? And what are the best steps to prevent it?
So it's very possible to predict cholera outbreaks in most settings and in most of the countries which we classify as endemic for cholera. When we say cholera is endemic in a country, we mean that in the last 3 years, cholera cases have been confirmed in the country and there has been a local transmission. They have not been imported, so the transmission has been local. Those ones we classify as endemic countries. And in most of these, they usually follow a seasonal pattern. So they follow a seasonal pattern, and most times it's during the rainy season. So when it rains and it floods and some of the toilets are damaged by the floods and they have the contaminated water sources. So it's what has been seen. However, we have also seen throughout last year atypical outbreaks that have happened outside the normal cholera season. And that is really due to some of these factors that I've been talking about. So it is possible to predict. Once we predict, we are also able to do risk assessment and to do preparedness. So in most of these locations and using the guidelines from the Global Cholera Control Task Force, we are able to do risk analysis and identify the hotspots. And within those hotspots, you can implement what we call the multi-sectoral interventions. So you can address the water issues. You can address the hygiene and sanitation issues. You can address access to safe care in terms of making sure you have decentralized facilities that people can access when they are sick, and also making sure that you have rehydration fluids very close to the population. So all these things can be done, and if they are done correctly, you can be able to mitigate the risk of an outbreak. It's that we are, it's also that we are not able to really do the mitigations properly. And that's why we are having these challenges. Now, the second issue I wanted to add is also there needs to be sustained investment by governments in water and sanitation. And this is one of the things that is contained in the roadmap for cholera elimination 2018-2030, that really governments, once they have done the identification of the cholera hotspots, that progressively each year the governments invest in provision of clean and safe water. And that can be able to drastically reduce the risk of cholera outbreaks.
Zambia, you mentioned the country earlier. Zambia has been struggling with a cholera outbreak for a month now. What is fueling this outbreak in Zambia? There have been over 300 people who died, according to latest data. How much of a threat is it also for neighboring countries?
So thank you very much. So yes, Zambia has been dealing with a cholera outbreak throughout the 2023. It has been on and off. Initially, earlier in January, there was an outbreak in the district called Bubui, and then it moved to other districts. It was contained, and in October, we had the current outbreak, which is happening in Lusaka province, and mostly in districts that are peri-urban districts surrounding Lusaka city. And this outbreak largely has been driven by very high water tables. So when it rains, the water is very close to the surface. It fills up, and the latrines that are there, they get flooded, unprotected springs and wells. So these ones, they get contaminated quickly. So all those water sources have been the major drivers of this. You also have congested peri-urban areas, and then you have areas where the access to safe and clean water has been very, very limited. And we are really concerned in terms of the number of cases, but also, as I mentioned earlier, with the number of deaths, the case fatality ratio is now around 3.8 to 4%, which is very, very high. And we need to see that going down quite quickly. Within the Southern Africa sub-region, we have had a repeated cross-border transmission. It's either between Zambia and Mozambique, or Zambia and Malawi, Malawi and Mozambique. And therefore, whenever we have, and even Zimbabwe and Zambia, whenever we have an outbreak in any of those countries, it presents a risk to the neighboring countries, because one, most of them are very close communities, and it's very easy for sick people close to the border to seek care across the other in the other country. And therefore, we always encourage very strong cross-border collaboration, integrated response actions, surveillance and sharing of information, and even implementation of joint activities to prevent transmission across the border. So those are things that we are actively engaging with the governments within the sub-region to ensure that we have a concerted effort to control this outbreak.
That was Dr. Patrick Oltim with the WHO Africa region, joining us from Brazzaville. That's all for this edition of Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu, in Washington, with producer Kwame Ofori. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.